I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. There are just so many things about the Archer Daniels Midland case that you really don't want to know. For example, what a little chemical called lysine does to fatten up your chicken McNuggets. Or the range of CEO Duane Andreas' influence on American and Canadian and Japanese and European politicians ever since the days of Eisenhower and the heyday of Hubert Humphrey and Bob Dole. The details of how Archer Daniels Midland divided the international production and fixed the prices on grain derivatives and chemical additives that run through the whole modern farm business seemed utterly untrackable in the newspaper trial accounts of the last 5 years. But then, remarkably, our guest, Kurt Eichenwald, investigative reporter for the New York Times, found a way to penetrate it all and make it as memorable as the book and the movie, A Civil Action. In fact, it's much more complex as an emotional tale than the whistleblowing saga of the cigarette industry that became the movie The Insider. Kurt Eichenwald's way into this saga is a single man, Mark Whitaker, who aspired to run Archer Daniels Midland someday and thought it might help his career to tell the FBI about the wholesale criminality he was observing at close quarters. And that's just the beginning of a case that convicted ADM and Mark Whitaker himself. Connection listeners, you may never want to cook with oil or to eat processed food again. Listen up. The phone is 1-800-423-8255 and call in on the informant connection. And by the way, do you know who's taping your office meetings? And do you really know what big corporate international trading meetings sound like? Kurt Eichenwald is going to tell us all about it. Welcome. A remarkable book. Everybody's been reading deep into the wee hours, Kurt. What is the moral, would you say, of this enormously demoralizing story?
That there's a lot that goes on out there that we don't know about. That when corporate executives get behind closed doors, when folks wearing suits who look respectable think nobody is listening, they can be out there engaging in crimes, ripping us all off, or doing activities that really stretch beyond anything we might imagine.
Why didn't the hugely competitive international market in foodstuffs police itself here? How did they get away with brazenly agreeing who will make so many cubic tons of this? And
well, it's hard to be to police yourself when you're one of the criminals. I mean, basically, everybody got into the same room. Everybody sat together and said, we can make money by breaking the law. Competition's hard. When we're out there trying to win customers by offering them better prices, we don't do well. We're losing money that way. If we sit down and say, we're not going to offer a customer less than this price, they end up making money. We don't. And as a result, every time every American and pretty much everyone in this world walked into a grocery store over the last 10 years, they were unknowingly being the victim of a crime.
Explain these little magical substances that ADM trades, and then how they would work it out with the Japanese, say.
Well, ADM was a company that a lot of us haven't heard of other than their advertising on the Sunday morning talk shows where they proclaim themselves a supermarket to the world. But in truth, we do business with them every day and just don't realize it. They take grains like corn and soybeans and crush them up and make the additives that go into virtually everything that is now available when you go grocery shopping. Right now I'm having a Pepsi, and it's got citric acid and it's got high fructose corn syrup that come from ADM. If you're feeding your baby Gerber baby food, it's got a few additives from ADM. If you're having a pepperoni pizza, the pepperoni has ADM additives, and so does the crust, and possibly so does the cheese. If you're having a sandwich, the Hellman's mayonnaise, the bread, maybe the oil that went into cooking some of the meat. As you head down the line, there is literally almost nothing that doesn't have an additive somewhere that is derived from this company. I mean, if you go into your refrigerator and strip out, you decide you're not going to do business with ADM anymore and you're going to throw out every food that they have, you're not going to have dinner tonight. It's just the nature of the world today.
I never knew the chemistry of it, but I knew the politics of it because in the 70s, this sort of modestly quiet but immensely powerful figure, Duane Andreas, hovered around all the politicians running for president, but most especially the Midwesterners. He did seem to own a big piece of Hubert Humphrey, probably a bigger piece of Bob Dole. He certainly got his calls returned by George McGovern, Brian Mulroney in Canada. I mean, Duane Andreas meant cash for a campaign, but he also meant a sort of a bottomless pit of financial resources.
There has never been a figure in American politics like Duane Andreas. I mean, this is somebody that most Americans, I think, really haven't heard of. But in truth, he has been everywhere. I mean, if you go back to my favorite story is the Watergate scandal, and there's the infamous $25,000 check that Bob Woodward traced down from the re-election campaign of Richard Nixon, the committee to re-elect the president, to one of the Watergate burglars. What is often left out of that story is where did that check originally come from? And guess what? It came from Duane Andreas. Andreas is a political figure unlike any in the world. My other favorite story is back when Mikhail Gorbachev had just become the leader of the Soviet Union, an American delegation led by then Speaker of the House Tip O'Neill was the first group of Americans to come in and meet Gorbachev. And as they're shaking hands, Gorbachev says to O'Neill, "Oh, Duane Andreas tells me you're a good fellow." And O'Neill laughs and said, "Why, I was just playing golf with him. And he tells me that you know a great deal about agriculture." I mean, here are two giants on the world political stage just meeting each other. And the method of introduction is they're both friends with Duane Andreas.
Did that mean that Archer Daniels Midland thought it had complete political immunity from for price fixing?
I can't speak of what they thought. I can say that this was an incredibly brazen crime. And these were people who were very comfortable with what they're doing and really strongly believed that they would never get into trouble. I mean, the thing about the tapes that are featured in the book, many of which have never come out before, is it does underscore just this nature of general criminality that was going on in the company. I mean, these are people who sat around deciding to violate campaign finance laws, knowing that it was illegal, and calculating, well, how much will this cost us to pay the fine? How much is that after tax? Well, that's $12,000. Well, that's less costly to us than disappointing the politician who wants money. And this is virtually word for word what they say. It's an astonishing view into exactly what corporate America, in its worst instance, thinks and says. And unfortunately, it sort of fits the nightmare that some of the most fearful about what goes on behind closed doors. It fits the nightmare that they've projected.
Let's talk about law enforcement here. The FBI is all over this case, but sort of by accident. In fact, the FBI was invited in by Archer Daniels Midland because they thought they were being extorted or played with or threatened.
Yes.
And in other words, ADM didn't get caught so much as they
got snared.
Yeah, well, they called the cops who, it wasn't even that the cops figured out the problem, but they met a guy who said, "Let me tell you about the problem."
Right. Well, ADM did. They didn't go right to the FBI. They're not quite that forefront. They instead went to the CIA. What had happened was there's a fellow at ADM, one of the more unusual people I've ever met, named Mark Whitaker, who was this rising executive, young guy, who was heading up their new division, which was called the Bioproducts Division. And basically what this was a bioengineering group. They were using their old technology and with new science. And he came to work one day and said, you know, we've been having trouble with the biotech plant. Well, I got a call from a Japanese competitor telling me that we have a saboteur in the plant, a saboteur who was working for the Japanese competitor. And this person who called me will identify that man for $10 million. Well, ADM executives are not the kind to take threats lying down, and so they went to the CIA. The CIA, in turn, notified the FBI, and in no time, the FBI shows up at ADM's front door. They give them the information. The FBI agent, a fellow by the name of Brian Shepard, wants to interview Whitaker. They go out to his house to put a tape recorder on his phone to catch any more of these phone calls from the Japanese competitor. And before he leaves, Whitaker says, by the way, I want to talk to you for a minute. Sits down in his car and spills this story of price fixing, of corporate espionage, of the use of prostitutes for corporate espionage. I mean, a tale that is truly astonishing. And Special Agent Shepard sits there taking it all in, almost stunned. Now, what makes it all the more interesting is knowing the punchline. The entire story of the saboteur was fictitious. Whitaker had made it up. One of the explanations he gave was that he had made it up for the purpose of buying more time to get the plant running. There are a lot of other theories about what he was doing, but that one event where Whitaker said, don't worry about investigating the saboteur, start looking into all these other activities, and the FBI started going down that path, is the just happenstance moment that set the government on the path to finding one of the most massive criminal conspiracies that have ever been uncovered.
And one of the strangest sort of corporate figures that I've ever read about, this Mark Whitaker, I mean, a tailspinner, but seems like multiply neurotic, many motives, including ambition in the company, but self-destructive at the same time, too. I mean, the remarkable thing seems to me is that, but for this very, very odd character, Mark Whitaker, who turned out to be a pretty substantial embezzler himself, even when he was talking to the FBI, the world would never have known. Not only, you know, nobody would have smelled the rat, but probably the government wouldn't have felt motivated to prosecute.
I mean, there were dozens and dozens of executives who were involved in these crimes, and the only person who ever stepped forward to reveal them was Mark Whitaker.
What does that tell you?
What that tells me is, when you need someone as troubled as he was, when you need someone who's getting jammed up like he was to end up exposing this, it really makes you stand back and say, what else is going on out there that I don't know about? You know, if you didn't have someone who has been diagnosed with a mental illness, he's been diagnosed as having a bipolar disease, if you don't have someone who is going to take the risks, is going to do the kinds of things that he did that just by chance reveal these conspiracies, well, does that mean these conspiracies really are safer than we would want to believe, that they are less likely to be discovered than we want to believe?
Kurt Eichenwald, you have tapes out of the investigation, the Whitaker tapes. I'd love to play a little bit of them.
Okay.
Would you introduce the tape in which he's conferring with his Japanese opposite numbers and pretty blatantly fixing prices?
Sure. This is a tape where more than any other, at least in my view, this just establishes what an astonishing informant this man was. What's going on here is the FBI has wanted to get all of the conspirators on videotape discussing their price fixing. Now, the problem is the FBI has authority in the United States. They can't go to Canada or Japan and set up video cameras without the consent of local law enforcement. That's harder to get than you would imagine. So the only other alternative is get them into the United States. The idea they came up with was, A lot of the Japanese, a lot of the lysine producers were Japanese. The Japanese were big fans of golf. Why not tempt them with a golf course in Hawaii? And in this instance, this is exactly what Whitaker's doing. What you don't know, it sounds like a normal conversation. The Japanese fellow is speaking from his office. Whitaker is speaking from a hotel room at the Hampton Inn in Forsyth, Illinois, surrounded by three FBI agents who are just listening to what's going on. And he is now trying to dangle the fellow and get him to come to Hawaii.
And regarding our next meeting,
yeah.
I think that our next meeting, since you guys hosted the Vancouver meeting, I think ABM should host the next meeting, don't you think?
Yeah, that's fine.
And maybe we host it in Maui.
Maui?
The lysine, you know, have the lysine meeting, the group meeting like we had last time in Vancouver,
yeah.
The group lysine meeting, to have it in Maui, Hawaii.
Maui, Hawaii is still the United States.
Yeah, but what's that mean? Still the United States?
Still the United States means the United States is very severe for the control of antitrust activity, no?
Yeah, but you think in a hotel in Hawaii next to an 18-hole golf course?
No, if your company judge, no problem. Maybe I will consult with the legal department.
Well, you know,
maybe we can call it association for the establishment of association.
Yeah, that's right. It could be that formal association.
Maui is very convenient for us, but I don't know.
For one, it'd be a formal association meeting, the starting of our association, and also would be a good distance for you and us, both together.
That's right.
Only about halfway for each of us.
Yeah, that's right. And on the golf course, I think, no big problem.
See, golf, the ultimate seduction. Promise them a golf game.
And you'll get a conspiracy.
Pretty out there.
It's out there. And also, just listen to how good he is at this. I mean, the
it's
guy.
It's obvious for me, frankly. I mean, of course, we know it now. But, I mean, he's clearly leading him on and making a tape and winking at the FBI guys.
The thing is, though, is that nobody ever caught on. Nobody ever. I mean, it is obvious when you're listening to it that it's going on. But if you're actually in the middle of the conversation, you have no idea that it's happening. Plus, there was one little moment in there where the Japanese fellow says, United States is very, or he says, is still the Hawaii is still the United States. Whitaker doesn't let that drop. He comes back and says, well, what does that mean? Because he knows what it means, but he wants the fella to say it on tape, that the United States is severe for the enforcement of antitrust laws. He gets it. And now, at that point, from that point on, there is no way that individual is going to be able to say, I never knew this was a violation of the law. It clearly establishes his intent to break the law.
A lot of big businesses out there, Kurt Eichenwald, in this global economy. How many are playing the game this way? How many books are you going to have to write here?
Well, I've been writing about corporate corruption and white-collar crime for 14 years, and the well is not dry yet. I don't know how deep it goes. It seems to be endless. This case, you started with a conspiracy in something called lysine. ADM wanted to cut a deal, and they said, well, you've already got everybody in lysine. We'll tell you about the conspiracy in citric acid. That involved a whole other group of corporations. They come running in and say, well, wait, we'll cut a deal, and we'll tell you about the conspiracy in vitamins. And the dominoes just keep falling and falling and falling, and it seems like price fixing was really just a way of doing business. That all of these people, you know, pleading about the importance of the free market and the greatness of competition, as soon as the doors were closed, were far more interested in defeating the very system they were praising.
Yeah, the domino trickle down effect of this case is remarkable. But again, you come back to the fact that would the antitrust division, would the FTC or the federal cops have ever caught on to it? Would they have prosecuted it with any zeal if they didn't have this wild man, Mark Whitaker, for
never.
His own complex reasons, stoking the fire continually?
Never would have happened. I mean, there's a prosecutor who has said that Mark Whitaker, even though people wouldn't really want to admit it, Mark Whitaker almost single-handedly changed the nature of antitrust law enforcement in this country.
For how long do you think? I mean, we have two front-running presidential candidates that seem to be more closely in touch with the Duane Andreases of the world, more responsive to corporate America than any we can remember. I mean, Who says antitrust enforcement has changed forever?
Forever, I don't know. The problem is you have a lot of folks out there who want to argue that price fixing is not an important crime, that want to argue that price fixing shouldn't even be a crime. And when you look at these tapes, when you hear these tapes, when you read this book, it is so evident how important this crime is, how it costs you, it costs me, it costs all of your listeners real money, and how easy it is to do, that we have to be vigilant. We have to watch out, because it is the politicians who make the rules, and the politicians, unknowingly, with all the money they're collecting, they've been collecting proceeds of a fraud in some instances. And it's a problem.
Mark Whitaker, who kept yanking on the thread here that sort of undid the whole garment, himself is doing time right now. And he turned out to be, as we say, a serious embezzler on his own. Or at least the government said he was after he turned on the FBI. Are we sure that he was actually a real thief?
Well, what happened here, it was actually immediately after the raid, about 6 weeks, and ADM came forward and said, your informant is a crook. He stole $2.5 million from the company. Here's the evidence. Whitaker, when confronted, said, that's not what happened. What happened is I received under-the-table bonuses from ADM. They used them to keep the executives who participate in crimes in line, and now they're used. I never thought they'd come out and reveal it because they have so much to lose, and now the evidence of their under-the-table bonus scheme is going to come out. Well, this was investigated. The government concluded it was not true, and that Whitaker simply had stolen the money, and that went up to $9 million by the time they finished the investigation. Now, there were a lot of people who believed, Whitaker continued to maintain, that this was an under-the-table bonus plan, and there were a lot of people who believed it. When I started out working on the book, I really wasn't sure what was real and what wasn't. By the time I was finished, I had no doubt that Whitaker had made this story up, and I went down and interviewed him in prison in Edgefield, South Carolina, and it took about 4 hours where we went through point by point what he considered to be his proof and what I considered to be the problems. And finally, he just paused, he looked at me, and he said, fine, I haven't told this to anybody but my wife, Ginger, but I will now tell you the truth. And for the next several hours, he confessed that he had made up the story of the under-the-table bonus plan, that he was desperate, that he was trying to pull himself out of a very bad situation, that he did see a lot of criminal activity inside ADM and just was corrupted, but that this money that he had, he did in fact steal, and he's admitted to it. So that it's a convoluted story, but
takes a thief and all of that. Kurt Eichenwald is our guest. His book is called The Informant, about the very odd character, Mark Whitaker, who broke Archer Daniels Midland, the agribusiness colossus, and led to a whole series, and it's probably not over, of price-fixing cases in the American food game. 1-800-423-8255 makes the informant connection. Margaret is on the line.
Hi, thanks.
Welcome, Margaret.
I'd like to go back to the antitrust discussion you just had for a second. It seems to me that possibly, and I'm hoping to get your comment on it, the government is in collusion too, because something so large, it's inconceivable to me that the government would not have known about it. And there's some profit for the antitrust enforcers not to move until they are pressured by your guest and somebody like Mark Whitaker. And I just wondered what your comment might be.
It's a well-stated point, Margaret.
What I would say is one of the things that gets very clear from the book, The Informant, is how hard one of these cases is. If you looked at lysine prices, which was the case we're talking about, if you looked at lysine prices in and of themselves, you could create a scenario, and in fact, at the trial, that's exactly what they did, for why the prices did what they did. It was you couldn't simply look at the chart of prices going up and down and say, aha, there's the conspiracy. It was only when you were actually inside the room, actually listening to these people talk, that you could establish what was going on. And these are not dumb people. They don't sit there and say, let's sit down and have our price-fixing conspiracy right now. They speak in elliptical ways. They use code names for each other. They make discussions where they're clearly trying to hide what they're saying. And it takes time until eventually they say, now we've reached an agreement. Now we're fixing the
prices.
But
if you ask them, what are you doing at that meeting? Would they say, well, we're just trying to guarantee an orderly market here?
Oh, no. What they would say is, we're having a meeting of the Lysine Association, and here is our agenda that shows you all of the things we discussed over the past few hours. Now, what was funny about that is the Lysine Association was created as a front. It was solely designed to allow them to have meetings where they could fix prices. The agenda that they would present you with was fictitious. They would hand it out at the price-fixing meeting and say, okay, here's what we're supposed to have been discussing, and they'd go through it a point at a time so that everybody had the same story.
Let's take a break. We're talking about the criminal price-fixing case against the giant of agribusiness, ADM. We'll talk to the prosecutor when we come back. We're talking with Kurt Eichenwald in the studio. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. We're talking about Kurt Eichenwald's book, The Informant, a remarkable take on the almost impenetrable price-fixing case against Archer Daniels Midland since the mid-90s. The defendants at ADM, some of them, are being resentenced today. The prosecutor in the case joins us on the line from Chicago, Scott Lasser, the U.S. attorney in Chicago. Scott Lasser, what are the new sentences, and why are they being resentenced today?
The Court of Appeal said that the judge erred when she sentenced Mick Andreas and Terry Wilson because she didn't increase their sentence because of their leadership roles in the price-fixing conspiracy. So they sent the case back to her to resentence, and they will get about an additional one-year sentence to the 2 years they're already serving.
This is Mick Andreas, son of Dwayne, but they're stiffening the sentence from 2 years to 3 years. I mean, you can get longer than that for smoking a marijuana cigarette.
Well, I think it's unfortunate that the price-fixing statute has a three-year maximum sentence, and so that's all that anyone can be sentenced to. It probably should be changed.
Does this surprise you, Kurt?
When I found out that was the law, by the way, hi, Scott. When I found out that was the law, it did surprise me. I mean, you know, you're talking about a circumstance where if you go in and you rob a grocery store, you'll get 6 years or so. But if you defraud thousands of grocery stores, the maximum you can get is three. I don't know why it's capped like that.
Well, but at the same time, it's a strange mismatch with $100 million in fines that ADM paid, right? How can the fine be so great and the incarceration so minimal?
There is something askew with the statute. I mean, like I was saying earlier, there are people who want to argue that price fixing should not really even be a crime.
And Scott Lasser, what's your view?
The maximum sentence should be raised. It should be larger because, you know, you have these huge international conspiracies where there are hundreds of millions of dollars at stake, and 3 years is not a sufficient sentence in many cases.
Scott, I wish you'd talk to us about Mark Whitaker, a very strange character who led the way in the opening of this case, led the federal prosecutors and the federal investigators with what turned out in hindsight, some of them to be cock and bull stories. What kind, you know, what misgivings do you have about being led by this sort of informant?
Well, as Kurt was mentioning before, price-fixing cases are extremely hard to prove without an insider. because you have to actually prove people are agreeing. It's okay for companies to charge the exact same prices if they follow the prices. If one charges one price and another company can charge the same price, it's the agreement to charge the same price that's a crime, and you need an insider. Mark Whitaker was that insider. Now, in my opinion, he only cooperated because he had his own embezzlement scheme going on, which related to his phony story about the saboteur at ADM. So I don't view him as a whistleblower, but rather someone who was just trying to distract the FBI from his own crime. But had he been able to stop lying and cooperate, he would have been rewarded for his cooperation, but he couldn't stop lying.
But for that character, and a bizarre man indeed, you'd never have gotten near this case, would you?
We wouldn't even know there was a crime going on, let alone have been able to prove it.
What does price fixing or antitrust enforcement do, on that basis, knowing that you couldn't have got into it all, except by this strange accident, and yet knowing also that this kind of chicanery has to be rampant?
Well, it's certainly rampant, I think, in some foreign countries. It's obvious from the tapes that the Japanese and the Europeans were extremely comfortable and matter-of-fact about price fixing. I don't think it's that rampant in the United States, but it obviously goes on.
How will law enforcement be different into the future? Will you just be waiting for the Mark Whitakers to show up?
Well, occasionally, Mark Whitakers do fall into your lap. Often it happens that someone gets in trouble for one crime, and then they tell you about another crime that they're involved in, and that frequently happens. Hmm. And I think that's inadvertently what happened in this case.
1-800-423-8255, the Archer Daniels Midland price-fixing case, and the informant, Mark Whitaker, who broke it. All told by Kurt Eichenwald in the book, The Informant. 1-800-423-8255 is the connection phone. Dennis is calling from Somerville, Massachusetts.
Good morning, Chris.
Morning, Dennis.
I don't want to take anything away from the achievement either of the author or the prosecutor. I think that exposing the price fixing was worthwhile doing. But as far as the massive political influence of ADM and Duane Andreas, this is a secret that's been hidden in plain sight for 15 years. If anyone wants to go back and look at old issues of Mother Jones, the investigative monthly magazine, or The Nation, or a number of other groups that pay attention to the configurations of power in this country and that have a critique of corporate power, they'll find the name of Duane Andreas over and over and over again.
Yeah, in terms of political influence, which is one important thing, but what about price fixing, sort of?
Price fixing, I'm sorry. Like I said, I applaud the work of these gentlemen, but it's really a far greater disservice to the public to buy a politician than it is to sell corn oil at a higher price.
Well, I would say two things to that. One is no,
Kurt Eichenwald.
You're right. There's absolutely no secret. I mean, you can't hide an elephant. It's absolutely no secret that Duane Andreas has been one of the most politically influential characters on the scene for the last 30 years. His connection to the politicians has been astonishing, and that's been, you're right, that's been written about in a lot of publications. It's been on Frontline. What has never happened before is you've never been able to sit down and say, okay, what do these people say when the doors are closed regarding this very issue? This is not a price-fixing book. This is a book about a series of activities inside this company. When you have what all the publications you were mentioning never had before, when they would talk to Duane Andreas or the Andreas family, they would just say, we're exercising our First Amendment rights. We're supporting people we want to support. What you have in the book is a tape recording, and it's one of my favorites, where they sit around saying, if we give this politician more money, it's in violation of the law. Well, the fine will only be this much money. That's not so bad, because if we disappoint him, it'll cost us a lot more money I mean, it's the drop dead proof of what everybody always feared.
Well, I'm looking forward very much to reading the book, and I'm also going to be interested to hear how NPR's little advertisements that it runs for its news program change, and whether ADM continues to support All Things Considered and so forth.
Dennis,
you're just going to have to make a little bigger contribution to public radio. Go ahead.
I was going to mention that a hopeful part of the story is that despite the political clout of ADM, it didn't help them in the criminal justice system. And indeed, you had the spectacle that the United States government entered into agreements with foreign companies to testify against a very powerful American company so that the system worked.
He's absolutely right in that. I mean, ADM's influence extends to the political realm. They do manage to maintain pressure in Washington, but in the end, the bad guys went to jail.
Well, yes, but let's grant also that it was partly because you had this unsinkable wacko, Mark Whitaker, who kept turning up stuff that had to be pursued. I mean, if you had a conventional whistleblower, he might have been contained, dismissed, silenced.
If you hadn't had the tapes, I mean, the tapes made the case. If you hadn't had the tapes, you would have very hard to get these people.
Tapes make interesting broadcasting, too. Here, let's run another little bit of one of those meeting tapes in which they're arranging markets as they're not supposed to do, and comes a knock on the door. Would you introduce that?
This is my favorite tape, because this is this little excerpt. This is where they've been meeting for years. They're now in a meeting in Atlanta, and there is what I like to call price fixing humor. They're making jokes about who's coming to the meeting later, and one of the fellows says starts mentioning the names of customers, the people they're defrauding. Oh, maybe they'll be coming, and then the names of law enforcement agencies start coming up, and eventually in this tape there is a knock at the door. And the person at the door is, in fact, an FBI agent giving Whitaker his briefcase recorder, which
pretending to be a room service waiter,
pretending to be a hotel employee. And inside the briefcase is the backup recorder that, before the meeting started, wasn't working, and they had fixed it, and so they deliver it to him in the middle of the meeting.
Should we listen?
Yeah.
Two more from Saywon. One from Tyson, one from Conagra, one from...
Share this meeting.
Well, DJ knows the front, so everything's clear.
I'm one from FBI. Yes, yes.
It's seven, we're at TC.
I think Kanji's going to pretty much lead the meeting, and obviously the topic here at the beginning would be, I think, more volume. Related, because price is going to start at 10:30.
Yes.
No, I'm not with the bank with people.
He's back there.
What about the right room? Yes. Yeah. Left down in the cafeteria.
Okay. When I've signed up all the food and everything.
You forgot your briefcase there?
Yeah.
Oh.
When I signed up for all the food and everything.
Very honest, huh?
Yeah.
In Paris, would have already been sold.
Yeah. Luckily, I had all my passports and everything still in my room.
You're keeping all documents in the case?
No, just
You call it price-fixing humor. He calls it very funny.
These guys are sitting here committing a felony, and they think it's the funniest thing in the world. I mean, they're having just a grand old time. And the jokes, I mean, if you're hearing them, it's like the knock comes at the door. They say, oh, is that the FTC? No, it's the FBI. And Whitaker makes this casual comment near the end of that he has his passports in his room, and one of the other executives looks at him and says, you're keeping your documents in case, you know, in case you have to flee the country. It's the kind of thing. These guys know they're committing a felony. They know how bad it is. And it's the funniest thing in the world. They just love it.
1-800-423-8255 makes the Archer Daniels Midland price fixing connection. It's Kurt Eichenwald. And the prosecutor in Chicago, Scott Lasser. 1-800-423-TALK. Gary is calling from Cedar Rapids.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Gary.
Two questions. First of all, is this really a deterrent to these big companies? Was the penalty to ADM itself really that big that anything's going to stop, or is the history you've just discussed saying it won't? And secondly, Howard Buffett, the son of Warren Buffett, used to work there. Did he have any involvement in this kind of thing, or do you have any knowledge of that? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Gary, thank you.
I'll deal with those one at a time. Will it have any effect in the future? It will, I believe, because what's happened is, you know, price fixing investigations used to be very genteel, kind of white glove affairs. Now they're much more aggressive. They have confrontational interviews, they have search warrants, they have tapes, they have wires. So that word is out that the nature of law enforcement has changed. Also, one of the things you've had is the Justice Department has adopted basically a policy of come in and confess and you will get a better deal. And a lot of companies are coming in because they see the dominoes falling. That's really what you need. You know, to unwind a rug, you need the first string pulled, and this pulled about 15 strings. I can't say everything will get caught, but they're doing a much better job than they've ever done in the history of antitrust law enforcement.
How much do the fines and, of course, the embarrassment hurt ADM?
I can say for sure that ADM is in a different position than it was 5 years ago. I mean, the value of their stock is more than 50% down. Dwayne Andreas has retired. His hand-picked successor, Mick Andreas, is instead in prison and is about to be resentenced today. It has upended that company.
What about Howard Buffett?
Howard Buffett's in the book. He was a fellow who was the assistant to the chairman. He worked for Dwayne Andreas. And virtually everyone who reads it comes away saying, well, Howard Buffett was an honest guy. Howard Buffett is a fellow who, within days of the raids on ADM, resigned. Now, he was in an unusual position because one of the fellows he was close with at the company was none other than Mark Whitaker. And, you know, he never quite understood why Whitaker would come over to when he talked to him, Whitaker would go and lean on the credenza behind his desk and lean over to talk to him. The reason why he was, you know, taping him. But Buffett was also one of the people, you know, obviously Whitaker's role was supposed to be a secret. Buffett was also one of the people who Whitaker told, before the raids, before the case went overt, that, in fact, there was this massive price-fixing investigation. And he even, in fact, told Buffett, you're going to be visited by the FBI on June 27th, 1995 at 6 o'clock. And Buffett was sitting there having dinner, looking at his watch. The knock came out the door, and he's like, wow, that was well-timed. Hmm. So, but no, Buffett comes off as a man of honor who was in a bizarre situation.
1-800-423-8255. The ADM connection. John is on the line.
Hi.
Hello, John.
Hi, Mike. My question relates to the fact that we hear so much about price fixing here. I imagine it goes on quite a bit. But how does, say, the OPEC oil cartel fit into this, where they have international production and price level fixing for oil?
In truth, that it doesn't fit into this case at all. I mean, what you have in that circumstance is a foreign cartel. You know, we certainly aren't able to have a prosecution of them. But in this circumstance, what you had were direct agreements on price for a particular product, with people knowing that the intent was to violate the law.
American companies cannot be part of that cartel because it's illegal in the United States.
Yeah, no, we're the victims in that case. Kurt, looking around sort of the global marketplace, where or in the American marketplace, where would you expect you might find cartelized pricing?
Well, what Scott was saying earlier was it's obviously very rampant in Japan, very rampant in Europe. It's very clear from the tapes and also from of the settlements that have come out ever since then. But it's also clear that American companies are getting caught up in it as well.
1-800-423-8255. Jeffrey is on the line.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, Jeffrey.
Good. There was an interesting point you made earlier, where if you rob the grocery store through the outdoor, that is, you know, shoplifting or armed robbery, then you go to jail for a long time. But if you rob it through the indoor, right, well, that's not so bad, you know, if the goods coming in through a price-fixing scam. Anyway, my question is along those lines as to, I mean, you kind of touched on it at the beginning of the show, but over the course of time that this scam was in place, I mean, do they have any way of determining how much this actually cost people in through their grocery bills? You know, how widespread was it? What products did it affect? And what's the cost of this, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Scott will probably correct me if I'm wrong here. The number, I believe, was attributed to, just for ADM, was something in the neighborhood of $80 million. Am I right about that?
I think there were figures like that about, you know, how much they were getting above what the market should have been. Now, it's very hard to trace that to the consumers because, for example, with lysine, which is one of the markets, that's an additive that's used by large producers of poultry and pigs. So you're upstream quite a ways from the grocery store and the consumers. So what the consumers were overcharged is really impossible to calculate.
It's sort of, you know, the $80 million is coming from someplace, and it ultimately hits the bottom, but how, where and how is very hard to calculate.
Hmm. Jeffrey, interesting. Thank you. 1-800-423-8255. Daniel is on the line.
Hi, Chris.
Welcome, Daniel.
Hi. I just wanted to say what you said before about the it's really a matter of getting to the politicians, and both the candidates have either ignored it, or the other one is just preaching campaign reform in the daytime and accepting huge contributions at night. So my question really is, are the American public, is the American people really, are they aware of what's going on? Because otherwise, shouldn't Ralph Nader have more than 4% in the polls?
Well, this book, I tell you, is the proof of Ralph Nader's biggest nightmare. There's a lot in here that deals directly with what he's talking about. On the other hand, what you have here for the first time is the evidence of what, you know, what the big money fat cats really think about federal election laws. They think they're laughable. They think they're things to joke about. These are not people who cower in fear saying, oh my goodness, I might be fined and my name might be in the paper. And there's never been a time, you know, up until now, every time you talk to people about why are there so much money being given, why you're doing things like that, they shroud it in the flag and the cloak of patriotic duty. And in truth,
and Mitch McConnell, senator from Kentucky, who fights the reform tooth and nail at every step, says, "What do you mean corruption? How could campaign money ever lead to corruption of my Senate colleagues?"
You know, and it's right here. I mean, it is right here. People talking about that it is less expensive for them to pay the fine than it is to disappoint the politicians who want the money. And
has Ralph Nader read or much less embraced this book yet?
I have no idea.
But quite seriously, I mean, if you want a kind of okay, you want to know what I mean about a sort of corporate power, kind of corporate takeover of American democracy, this is a very precise, who struck John, in their words, clearly documented account of just exactly what that means.
Yeah, this is nobody's allegations. This is what happened on tape. And so it's very, very clear what's going on.
It's also a wonderful read. Kurt Eichenwald, thank you enormously for years of work and a wonderful book. It's called The Informant, about the breaking of the ADM price-fixing case.
And also, if you actually want to see the tapes, there are excerpts up on the website, which is informantbook.com, one word, informantbook.com, and you can download them and watch these people commit the crime in the comfort of your home.
And you can find your way to it and continue the conversation about the whole case on our website at theconnection, one word, .org. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston.
Informer, you know, say that I miss from the Iago Glam. I need keep on burn down. Take down my lesson, say that I miss from the start somewhere down in the end. I need keep on burn down. Informer, you know, say
that I'm a stomach, I'm a glam. I keep on boom now. Take them on the say that I'm a stomach, stop somewhere down the lane. I keep on boom now.
Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.